Hey everybody, welcome back to Link to the Podcast number 2. I am Indie Renegade from the Achievement Hunter and Rooster Teeth community.
And I'm Striker McLean, I'm a lead player and game designer.
And you're listening to Link to the Podcast. So this week we are talking about MMOs, we're talking about online gaming, Pokemon, we're talking about game compulsion and addiction. What else are we talking about?
We'll be hitting a little bit of E3, your TV, and probably tons and tons of tangents along the way.
Yeah, and also some fairly touchy subject matter for females in gaming, and the way it's shaping up to be is we'll be talking about this a lot, me being a female in the gaming world, so keep an ear out for that.
All right, so let's get started. So, I guess for some background, if you've been listening to our podcast, I'm a huge League of Legends player, and I do dabble a bit in a few other competitive games. And indie, not so much?
No. Mostly because I've never been a huge online player. Like, the most online I ever did was, like, playing Command & Conquer with my dad. I would be in, like, the top floor of our house on my laptop, and he would be in his office in the basement, and we would, like, LAN Command & Conquer battles with each other. That's, like, the most online I've ever done, until, like, this past December when I got Xbox Live.
Mm. Yeah. Is there something that was keeping you away from the online community, or just no interest or no exposure?
I'd say, kind of lack of interest. I'm not what I would consider a competitive gamer, because I don't really need to show off my e-penis, you know what I mean?
Of course.
I mean, I've never been into sports as a kid, and, you know, anything like that has been a little bit of a turn-off. I like social competition, like, if you're with someone and...
Like drinking games.
Yeah. I love drinking games. By the way, I lied to you earlier when I said I had to get my headphones.
Oh, what are we doing? Getting a drink?
Yeah. Well, I need my headphones, too.
What's on the menu for tonight?
Guinness, my fave.
Good. I don't know. I don't know what it is. Like, I don't necessarily think it's a certain type of person. I think that a lot of games nowadays are giving the online availability. And there are a lot of people who, when given the opportunity, would, like, they do want to see how they measure up to other people and not just the game's AI, for instance. It's more interesting to go against another person. Like, especially if you ask anyone who plays fighting games, you know, is it anything like playing against a real person when you play against the computer? Yeah, and they'll tell you absolutely not, because they're mind games, and there's just the human element that you can never quite get a computer.
Yeah.
So I think having it available is definitely getting it's letting a lot more players than would usually get into be competitive about it. It's giving them avenues to do so.
Yeah, I can see where that comes from. I knew a guy, and he was so excited one day because he's an Xbox guy like me, and he got to, like, the 28th position in the world for, like, some online game for Battlefield 3, and he was so excited, like, oh man, I'm in the top 30, I'm number 28, and I'm like, sure dude, whatever, you know. That's just me, though. It's not something that I really care too much about.
Yeah.
Although I can see why people are super into it. My dad, for instance, my dad's a military man. Mm. He applied to go overseas several times. They never approved him to go overseas for random unknown reasons. So just living with him and watching him play Call of Duty online, I think for him it's a little bit of a kind of a release, because...
Yeah.
It's something he always wanted to do, was to go away to Israel with the United Nations, or to go to Afghanistan. Something he always wanted to do, but he was never able to do, which is to, you know, defend his country and or what he believed in, all that soldiery stuff. But
yeah.
I think for him, as, you know, in an isolated case, because I'm not saying that everybody who plays online for Call of Duty does this, but I think for him it's just, it's almost like putting
it's himself... comfort.
Yeah, it's putting himself in the shoes that he never got to
where
play.
He wants to be, yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of similar to how, like, how someone who loves daydreaming about, you know, Lord of the Rings would play, like, Oblivion or Skyrim and just be like, oh my god, it's like I'm living my fantasy.
It's awesome, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's probably why both of those games are freaking huge, right?
Oh my god, yeah. Oh, as a kind of tangent, we are in Morrowind right now.
Oh yeah, is that what you've named us?
Yes, we're in Morrowind right now. I recently moved from the Northwest Territories where I was living as of yesterday, and I've moved home to the Maritimes. So I called the Northwest Territories, it's north of the 60th parallel. So my online friends and I, we started calling it Skyrim because literally that's what it is. And now that I'm back in my birth province, if you look at the Tamriel map, Morrowind is geographically where Maritimes are, so, yeah.
That's awesome.
And my preferred race is Dunmer, and the Dunmer are from Morrowind, so for me, it's kind of like a cool little thing for me. Yeah, it is home. Now it's time. Boats. And water, and lobster, and fucking seaweed and shit.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So now, given the opportunity, like, I don't know, what, like, the new Skyrim Online, is that something that you have interested in, that you're interested in? Is that something you would do? If something came out that there was a competitive version of it, or part of it, would you participate?
I think I would 100% participate in Elder Scrolls Online. The only thing holding me back, really, is, shitty laptop. as
cough,
you know,
cough, Linux, cough, cough.
Yeah, I have Linux. Ubuntu for the win, bitches. Although you can get the Humble in Ubuntu on Ubuntu through the software.
Which is nice.
Yeah, I don't use them, obviously, because I just don't have the hardware for gaming, period. But yeah, I mean, if the Elder Scrolls Online came out, which it will, I'm excited to play it. A, because it's... it's the fucking Elder Scrolls Online, but also because I'm intrigued to see what an Elder Scrolls game would be like. Yeah. Like, I'm kind of expecting RuneScape a little bit.
A little bit.
But, like, nicer graphics.
Well, and I mean, yeah. Like, seriously, well, that's what RuneScape basically was, right? It's this huge world where you just got to develop your RPG character more. It wasn't like super heavy quest based. It was all just open world, do whatever you want.
Yeah, and that's essentially the Elder Scrolls. So, although I hope it's, you know, a little bit nicer to play than RuneScape. Although RuneScape's still huge, though. Somehow,
yeah.
It's still huge, which is, I mean, good for Jagex. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Filthy casuals.
Yeah. Actually, when I did online game, one of my first, like, MMO at all was actually RuneScape. of all things, yeah. And I played RuneScape until I realized, oh, there's no fucking get all to do unless you get the member account, so then I stopped using it. But there's only so many times you can do, like, giant chicken quests before you get bored of it.
Yeah.
Farming is also fun, though.
Which one?
I had a lot of fun farming my skills.
Oh. Yeah.
Like, with trees that automatically friggin' spawned back within, like, a matter of seconds. That was fun.
I also heard that there was a request for us to talk about Pokemon while we're talking about competitive stuff.
Yeah, a friend of mine on the Achievement Hunter community was like, oh, dude, nice podcast, but why the fuck you didn't talk about Pokemon? So we're going to talk about the Pokemon, the underground world that has apparently sprung up, and it goes along with our competitive gaming subject. The only reason why I know about it was because in the Game Grumps Pokemon Leaf Green? No. Yeah. No. Yeah?
One of them. I might have been at Ruby, but I don't know.
I can't remember which one it was. But yeah, Egoraptor had mentioned, this theme in passing and about their meta and whatever. And I didn't realize that there was a competitive side to Pokemon. So, yeah.
Yeah, there definitely is. Now, I am by no means, like, super expert at this. This is only something that I've delved into a little bit with some assistance from some friends. But, if you look at the actual Pokemon games, there's a lot that you can do to vary their stats. And even so much as what's called EV training, where you can, like, level up Pokemon's specific stats to, like, min-max them.
Yeah.
So you can have specific Pokemon that are, that have higher stats than other Pokemon of the same, like, type or the same Pokemon. And so, you know, fast forward, there's this online community that use, like, basically a Flash kind of Pokemon battle. And you get to make your team min-max all the stats that you want. Give them, you know, all of the natures and the special abilities or whatever that you need. And you battle and you just go up and down the ladder. And it really is interesting because everyone's separated off the tiers. The stronger Pokemon are obviously higher tier, and there are only a few of them that are, like, highest of high tier. There's actually, like, a huge amount of strategy behind having physical sweepers that are meant to deal with people with low defense, or, like, people that are meant to deal with, if spikes are down, that's, like, a huge strategy, and you can get people that have a specific move to deal with that. And again, I'm probably butchering all of this, but just there's so much to learn, really, about it, and it's, like, all the team compositions have been really, really far looked into. To not honesty, Game Freaks has been really good, I think, about keeping it at least very interesting.
Yeah.
So it is really nice that all those people who grew up with it as children, you know, those who didn't want to take it to a competitive level, well, whatever, but those who wanted to get really involved with it, they did provide an avenue of complexity while keeping the game itself very, very simple.
That's awesome, because, I mean, there's always that argument where people are always like, man, Pokemon, the same thing over and over. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, it's Pokemon. Like, it's...
But what do you expect?
Yeah. It's fucking Nintendo, like...
Understand that the series was built on certain things, and that they're going to have to maintain those things. Although, we all wish they'd stop making Pokemon. I don't know that they're going to.
Have you noticed that they've run out of colors?
Pokemon X and Y. Okay, so when I first saw that, I was like, okay, so they're using math constants now. How much stupider do they think that we are?
Team X and Team Y?
Yeah, Pokemon X and Pokemon Y.
Okay.
Watch out
when they bring out, like, Team Testosterone and Team Estrogen or something, or, like, Team Penis and Team Vagina.
You mentioned Game Grumps. That's a super recent thing, but I almost feel like we should have a moment of silence.
Oh, yeah. I just found out, like, a few hours ago, and it's a blow.
And they're doing other stuff with the channel, like, whatever that Steam Train, like, I'm sure they're great guys, but we're all just going to miss Aaron and John, and I think that just it's not going to do as well, not nearly. It's not going to transition as well as they hope, I think. Even though, like, I watched all of JonTron's videos, and I was like, oh, man, I wish he had more out. So it is nice that he's going to be able to get back to it, but I just wish that, like, him and Egoraptor maybe did, like, one game drop a week and then worked on their videos for the rest of the time or something. I don't know.
Yeah. then you also have to remember, like, they were, well, I mean, it seems like they're still doing it, but they are putting out 2 videos a day in some of their streaks. So it's, I can see where it got a little bit, maybe got redundant for them, putting out 2 videos a day, recording constantly. So I can see, yeah, I can see where you'd want to, you know, say, like, okay, well, we've been doing this every single day, quite obviously, and you just want to kind of branch out and go back to your roots. So I can understand why JonTron wanted to do that. And a lot of people in the community had been complaining about JonTron and Evil Raptor essentially abandoning
their own shit, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, I wouldn't feel so bad about Ego Raptor abandoning his shit, because, like, he had so much already, and he's done so much with, like, the animation community that it's fine. But sequelitis.
Oh my god.
Come on. Like, you just started the best thing ever, and then you leave. Come on. That's not cool, man.
The best part is, like, he's one of us, which is the thing that I love most with Ego Raptor. He is literally, he is one of us. He's this guy who literally lives on the internet. He just wants to play games and be, you know, have fun every single day. I mean, he's basically living the dream, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, screw him. Screw him. And his living the dream and doing all the stuff that I'm jealous of. Screw him.
Yeah, I mean, he's got talent, and he's doing well for himself, and he's aged, which is awesome. His fiance has an awesome channel, her name's Mortimer, and she puts out awesome beauty videos, which, and I love her, she's what? Fantastic, but, huh?
What videos?
Beauty videos, so, like, yeah. So, for me, they're, like, the perfect couple. Guy who plays games and chick who's just all about beauty, but yeah.
Yeah, sad face of Game Grumps. Yeah. But if this happens to get back to them, more sequelitis, seriously, come on.
Yeah, and you know what, me being somebody who is obsessed with Zelda and has a Zelda tattoo, please, like, I was so excited because his next sequelitis is supposed to be about Zelda.
How do you find this out?
On his Tumblr.
Oh my god.
Yeah. It's called Ego Raptor, Take a Whiz.
Ah, nice.
Yeah.
Does he only use it when he's in the bathroom?
Apparently, but if that's the case, he only takes a shit, like, once a year, because he hardly ever... What else are we going to talk about?
We've got plenty, I'm sure.
Okay, because we just tangented for, like, 30 minutes.
Well, Game Grumps. Seriously. Yeah. And Sad Face.
Yeah, Sad Face. I miss you, John. You are a magical, magical man.
Hero.
Although, yeah. But he's doing his own stuff, and
yep.
we'll have new content from him, so it's not like he's you know, dropping off the internet completely. So.
No. Yeah, it'll be good. All of his top tens, like, Overworld, top 10 overworlds, or top 5 overworlds, that's brilliant.
Yeah, and the, you know, there's no game reviewer like John Trump. Like, he's just in the review.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think game compulsion and addiction is on that list if we wanted to broach that topic.
Yes. When I was thinking of topics that I wanted to go over, I had been rewatching some videos from a group called Extra Credits, and now they're 3 people that essentially they make videos about different topics and issues in the gaming world, such as, you know, so you want to be a developer or a producer for video games, or issues like sex in video games and betrayal of women in video games. Extra Credits, they're amazing.
They're good stuff. Huge plug for them if you guys haven't checked them out already over at Penny Arcade, just Extra Credits. They've got, like, 7 seasons all talking about the absolute wonders of the game design industry, the video game industry, everything from, like, games in Brazil to, you know, just absolutely all the game design topics and everything you'd ever need. So, go watch it. You want the first episode to watch? Watch game music and games. Best episode.
And you met James.
Yes, and I actually, James actually came to the festival that my school hosted when I was in school for 3D called Jaloo. He came and gave a talk about educational education and its role with games. I got to hang out with him for a little while, and it was absolutely spectacular. And I fangirled, like, the entire time. whole time.
Yeah. I mean, for Stryker and I both, extra credits, they're just huge in our world. When I first met Stryker in real life, I think one of the first things that you ever showed me online was extra credits, and that was one of the things that really pulled me into the world of gaming, because I found it just so intriguing that so much thought goes into a game, or at least should go into a game.
It should. There should be thought in everything in a game. One of the things is, like, Bioshock Infinite. Bioshock Infinite is a game doing what games are supposed to do. It's got, like, all of the setting is just dripping with story that's not shoved in your face. Like, it's a world of exploration that gives you stuff to find out for yourself. And they use all of the, like, everything from mechanics to the setting to the people, the posters. Everything has a purpose. And that's what it should be in the game. If you have to create everything in a game, like, from the ground up, like, if you have to create everything, why not use it? Why not give it a meaning to the player and make the player go, oh, that's really cool, rather than just going, oh, this will just be a piece of background scenery.
Yeah. On that note, actually, I read a lot of reviews for a game called Remember Me. Did you hear about that one?
No.
Essentially, it is a game. It's kind of like in the Mirror's Edge line of games, with, like, a little bit of platforming, kind of set in a dystopian kind of world. And it's about, if you've ever read 1984 by George Orwell, it has to do with, like, memories and stuff, and changing them so that the outcome is different. So, you know, like, Back to the Future, almost.
Okay, cool.
And, anyways, if you read up on the concept of the game, it's super, super fucking intriguing.
Yeah?
Like, it's got really great lore to it, and it sounds really, really good, but the reviews I've read from various sites, because I like to aggregate my reviews and, you know, see what everyone's saying before I go out and get a game, is that the combat is just uninspired.
Okay.
The platforming is just, like, it's shit, so.
And that's really disappointing for a game with such promising, like, premise.
Yeah, is that when it doesn't quite convey so well. And Egoraptor talked about this in I think the first sequel, I guess, the second, I'm not sure.
Conveyance.
He talked about, not quite in this sense, but I mean, like, if you can...
It's in the fourth one.
Yeah, yeah.
Or it's in Super Castlevania 4 episode.
Yes. What do I do? Where do I go?
What the fuck?
But yeah,
well, nobody likes feeling like that. Like, seriously. Like, that, like, dungeons should never be designed so you can accidentally go backwards.
Yeah.
Things like
I don't mean conveyance in that kind of sense, where it's like you're playing the first Final Fantasy and you want to rip your neck out.
Oh, God.
But, like, because I did.
I remember that, too.
But yeah, but I mean conveyance in the kind of way that the promise and the lore behind a game really, really comes out. And it's really saddening to hear that, you know, you have something that's so grand and it just doesn't quite pan out. You know, from the reviews that I've read, it sounds like the game could have done better in different hands, so.
What you're talking about, I really want to call thematic cohesion. And that sounds like a bunch of big words, but... really, like, I definitely understand what you mean when you're talking about taking the theme of the game and really translating it into the mechanics, so you get a better feel for the setting and the story that you're supposed to be in.
Yeah, going to that, League of Legends is really great about that, isn't it?
Oh my god! So yeah, the thing about League of Legends is they take real good care to, no matter how, like, kind of out of scene the character seems, like, they really do a good job of keeping their thematics consistent. And, like, every character that you play, the way that they look And probably a really good example of this that I'll use is a champion called Nocturne. He is a black. He's got giant, like, plates on both of his arms. And he's supposed to be an incarnate of a nightmare. So, really fucking scary. And so, in theory, you would want this this champion to somehow cause fear to other players. He's supposed to be a nightmare. He's supposed to be scary. He's supposed to, you know, be that thing that keeps you up at night. And what they did is they did two really, what I think were really good things with him in that kind of sense. He has a move that will actually cause the fear status effect in the game, which just kind of causes you to wander around useless. But his ultimate, which is where I really do think that they captured his theme, is you press your ultimate button once, and all vision are cut off from your enemies. So immediately, their mini-map doesn't work anymore, and they can't see anywhere aside from their immediate champion's vision. And in League of Legends, that's really scary, because you don't know where enemies are. They could, like, obviously with Nocturne, he could just be coming up behind you to kill you. And the second time you press it, you zoom to your target. And it's got a really long distance. So when you do, like, it's a very unique visual and audio indicator for the spell, especially when you're on the opposing team. There's if you're not on his team and he uses it, you'll hear him laugh and your screen goes dark. And the next thing you, like, you know, if he's aiming at you, is he comes zooming in from off screen and starts attacking. And that kind of, that puts that thematic of, hey, there's this nightmare, there's this thing that's supposed to scare you and then jump out at you and freak you out. Well, here's this champion that literally puts you in the dark, cuts you off from, you know, all of the rest of your team, and then, you know, gets to pick someone and jump out at them. So they convey their thematics really, really well, and they put them into their champions, and they make them count. It's kind of like what I was saying, right? Like, you have a champion, he's got to use abilities, that's part of the game. Why not use the abilities to enhance his character, make him feel holistic?
Sand attack
from Fidji. But yeah. No, but that's actually that's a fantastic example. Because every once in a while in Pokemon, you get a Pokemon and you go, that shouldn't know that ability. That doesn't make any sense. Like, one of my favorite examples is back in the old Pokemon games in Red and Blue. If you caught a missing in No, and at least in my cartridge, if it ever gained a level, it just evolved into a Kangaskhan. So I taught it Sky Attack and Fly before I evolved it, and then it just evolved and turned into a level 100 Kangaskhan. So I had a Kangaskhan that could use Sky Attack and Fly.
What? Fuck.
Exactly, right? Like, that kind of breaks the thematic cohesion of the Pokemon. You can use those kinds of, like, attacks.
Yeah.
And, like, I think there's a really good comic of it where Ash is trying to fly on Scyther.
Yep. I love that one. Fly,
but Gary's flying away on a Pidgey.
Yeah. Or, like, bug Pokemon Pokemon that have wings but can't fly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, like, a Shroomish that can learn Focus Punch but doesn't have arms.
But no arms.
Yeah. It's okay, because I'm focusing.
It's okay, because it's a focus body problem.
Like, he like, picks up Ash's arm with his mind and just, like, the other Pokemon. But, yeah,
We did stray from our original topic, because we were talking about extra credits.
Yeah, anyways, aside from, oh my god, we got
yeah,
far.
Yeah, we were really far, huh?
Yeah, so we'll go back to the topic that we decided on.
I'm going
to
come back, and when I go through editing this, I'm going to count how many tangents, and we'll keep a tangent counter. Maybe I'll play, like, a little bing every tangent. It'll be good.
Okay, yeah, it'll be your thing, though. Okay, so this subject, it's close in the hearts of a lot of people who've been playing video games for quite a long time. A lot of people that I've talked to have experienced something like this. We want to talk about, anyways, as I started to say earlier, when I was thinking about what I wanted to talk about on the next podcast, I was watching a few extra credits videos, and one that hit me really, really close to the heart was a video that they made on the subject of gaming addiction, or what it should be correctly called, which is gaming compulsion. And in a typical extra credits episode, what they do is that they animate the main guy as he's talking, and they put, you know, like some funny images and memes in it. And it's an entertaining video to watch. But in the in this particular video, what ended up happening was James, the writer for the extra credits videos, he ended up basically sitting in front of a webcam and just talking about his personal experience with playing. What was the game that he said he played? It was like
EverQuest.
EverQuest, yeah. He was basically an EverQuest junkie.
Junkie.
And he was talking about it, how it affected him and his relationships and his friendships and his life. So, and if you ever find the time to watch the video, it is just, it's extremely heartfelt. It's very close to the heart, and a lot of people don't really realize they've gone through it until they realize, whoa, that was me.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, and I know you, like, you particularly identify that from all the times that I've known you, I've seen you definitely recede into games, whether it be like Fallout, Skyrim, any of those like big open world games that you can kind of lose yourself in.
Yeah, interesting anecdote actually. Last summer, right after I graduated high school, Stryker would get mad at me on a daily basis because he'd be texting, and he'd be like, yo, what you doing tonight? And because he lived in, like, a few towns away, so we didn't really, obviously we didn't see each other often, but he'd, you know, text me, and he'd be like, yo, what's going on today? And I'd be like, Fallout.
Lol, playing Fallout.
Yeah. Gaming several times in my life has been a major, major escape, and I've only just figured out my issues with depression and my mind, you know, literally recently, so it's still kind of a new world where I'm just trying to figure out myself as I'm going along, but essentially what I've done several times is kind of shut myself off from real life and gone into the world of games as often as possible. And I'm talking like, you know, gaming for 8-9 hours in a day. Or last summer, what I was actually doing, I would work at the movie theater that I was at from 5 to 11 at night. I would go home, play video games until 3, wake up at 10, take a shower, play video games until like 5, go to work, and then, you know, rinse, repeat. So it's just, you know, you just recoil from life, and then you just start getting into this game. So essentially what James is going over in his video, he was just talking about how becoming an EverQuest junkie and being in the world of online gaming had affected his life, and for the worse, for a little bit of it, as he admitted. And when I watched the video, I was like, whoa, okay, buddy, that was me. That was me. So it was really touching to watch. And one of the things that they go over in another video was the difference between gaming addiction and gaming compulsion, which is what it really is.
Yeah, and it is, like, there's this huge media backlash, as there always is with any new type of media, where, you know, people are being addicted to video games, children are dying, there's terrible things happening, you know, whatever. There's always going to be media backlash about, you know, everything, whenever anything little happens. But the thing with gaming is it's not... In any case where gaming is involved with any, like, child having issues with, like, mental stability issues, there are always more, higher factors at work, because the game itself is only used as an escape. It's not the issue. It's it treats a symptom.
Exactly. Like, it fulfills something in your life that you don't realize that you don't have. I think playing open-world Bethesda games, as I've been doing, probably fulfills a lot in my life. I mean, think of all the things that you do in a Bethesda game. You meet people. You prove your worth in a large world. You overcome obstacles. You encounter fucking dragons.
So that totally happens in real life.
Yes, it does. So I think it's just a lack of finding dragons in my life.
Yeah. Well, you know, some people are unfulfilled. Some people just need dragons, I guess.
Yeah. I'm a little bit better now, though, because, I mean, I have a better handle on who I am and, more importantly, how I, as a person, function as somebody who has to not only participate in society, but who has to try to have a healthy lifestyle in order to, you know, keep it going and not sink into depression again. So how I always explain it to people after seeing the video that James and the Extra Credits team made is that the difference between gaming addiction and compulsion is that an addiction implies that you have a chemical need. Your body has physically adapted to something, and you actually literally need it to keep moving. It's the way that addicts work, is that, let's say, you know, you start shooting up heroin or you start snorting cocaine. How it works is that your body basically instantly becomes attracted to it because of the way that the serotonin works in your brain. It feels good, it's fun, and it makes you feel better than you ever have, what have you. But there's a very fine difference between your body having a chemical dependency and, you know, a regular need to take a drug constantly, and creating an unhealthy lifestyle around an object in your life because you are out of lack of something. And that's what the difference is between getting compulsion and getting addiction. So whenever people say, like I was telling you before the podcast, whenever people say, oh, well, he's addicted to Minecraft, and it's just like, no, that's really, really the wrong thing to say. Like, I don't ever want to be touchy, but it's a very, very fine line. And I don't think we're ever going to adapt that to regular society. Like, gaming is still, it's only 30 years old, if you really think about it. Gaming is new. Gaming is really, really new. And, like, well, commercialized gaming, I should say, is new as we know it. And as you were saying, any new media form is going to be really, really vilified. It's going to be blamed for a lot of things. And, I mean, think of games,
this
like,
new thing that I don't understand.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and I'm going to blame it because I have no experience with it. It's like games like, I'm trying to think of a decent example for this, but because I really don't want to go to the Call of Duty or Call of Duty example, but I mean, take the Call of Duty games, I mean, they take elements of real life, such as, you know, terrorist issues and going into war zones. Those are very real things.
Mm-hmm.
And they put them into a video game, for better or for worse, regardless of your opinion of Call of Duty. That's what they do. They take real life elements that happen and then they put it into a game. That's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really easy to see how a 10-year-old playing Call of Duty, how you would think that he would suddenly become violent to, you know, his sister or something, or violent to her mother or what have you. And it's really easy to blame a violent video game. But there's also the reverse issue, where if your child is also being raised by an Xbox, that's bound to happen.
There's probably a reason that they're thinking, like, guns, right?
Yeah.
I may have mentioned this before, but it's a really good way of kind of thinking about this is I had a psych teacher who told us that when she was younger-ish, of course, there's only so much younger, but she had given her younger child, before she really understood video games, it was like a 6 or 7 year old boy, and she let him play Grand Theft Auto, just on his own, whatever. And, you know, whatever, fine, dandy.
She was okay with it.
Oh, yeah, it's terrifying. She was okay with it until one day she was outside, and her little 7-year-old was playing with her little 4-year-old girl, and little four-year-old's on her tricycle, her little, like, big plastic, you know, big wheel or whatever. And he comes over, pushes her off, and grabs it and rides away. And she's like, I can't believe that. But what, like, children are, like, they're molds. Like, literally, it's what they are. They're going to learn what's around them. Whatever they intake, that's how they grow. They intake things around them. They learn off of those experiences. So if their experiences are going to be primarily sitting alone with Grand Theft Auto, then they're probably going to learn to beat up hookers and jack people's cars and think that police have no real consequence. But if they're maybe playing with their parent and the parent's like, no, that's not something you can do in real life. This is just a video game, and explain to them why.
Yeah.
You know, it's a whole nother issue, and it really is. Like, people have been saying it for a while now, but it's not really it's not the video games, it's not the TV, it's the parenting. Just raise your child instead of finding the convenient babysitter of video games and sending them off and going, okay, go play the Xbox now for hours and leave mommy and daddy alone. It's happening, and sadly enough, the thing is with, like, teenage pregnancy and whatnot, the cheap and easy fixes for getting children to stay quiet, unfortunately, you know, they might stay, like, that method might stay around more than we want it to, but it's not the right way. Like, raise your kids, guys, seriously.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's obviously going to be an issue when little Timmy decides to drive his helicopter into a hooker.
Yeah.
Like you can do in fucking Grand Theft Auto. Oh, by the way, I am so pumped for GTA. It's gonna be a great time. Yeah, new GTA, it's gonna be fun. But yeah, there is a huge, huge difference between letting your kid get raised by an Xbox and actually telling your child, no, this is not how things work in real life.
Yeah.
Like, in video games, they call Juarez, Call of Juarez and Duke Nukem, they're just, as far as I'm concerned, just abortions to the gaming world because they send completely the wrong message. Like, life isn't completely all about, you know, guns and getting bitches. It really, really is not. And I can see where people in the media and people from, like, Fox News or people who are not gamers that look at this activity, see how children react and see, I can really see how they deduce that, oh, well, violent video games are wrong. But it takes a lot more insight than that. And if you think that the video game is wrong, you should really think about who's raising the child, the Xbox or the parent.
Yeah, definitely. That definitely is, like, a huge thing for, especially this day and age where it is becoming so, so relevant. Like, I know, I've seen, like small children, like, super small children using, like, iPads and stuff, and I'm just like, it's not, you should be reading a book or playing with a toy or something. It's not for your intelligence level. It does too many complicated things. Seriously.
Yeah. When I was in the fourth grade, I read the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy. And that was a huge accomplishment for me. I was so proud of myself for doing that. Probably isn't an accomplishment for most people to read the trilogy, but I was in the fourth grade, so that was super fucking cool. It's a little discouraging to think that, you know, that's going to be a little bit more of a rarity, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, I was, like, as I said at the beginning of the podcast, I recently traveled from the Northwest Territories, Skyrim, to Morrowind, as I should say. and every time I go through, like, the Western Canadian airports, like Edmonton and Calgary, there's always children with, like, iPhones. Like, I'm talking 9-year-old girls with iPhones and, like, Apple products. And I shouldn't have a problem with it because, as we all know, Apple is just, you know, it's a fucking colossus in our world, and you should think that it is normal that, you know, kids have Apple products. I mean, my sister and brother, they both have their own iPod Touches or whatever, but it's just, there's something discouraging about thinking about kids that have their own iPhones. Like, And I think, like, an iPod is one thing, because that's something you can have fun with in game on or whatever, but, like, a full-on, full-fledged phone for a 9-year-old? You're kidding.
Yeah, it's too much, right? Like, I don't know. It's not... That's not cool. Yeah, I got my phone at 16. Like,
yeah.
And I had to buy my first computer on my own. Another shameless plug, just because I'm scrolling through a feed here, and I definitely want to quote this. I'll quote it first and give you guys a source afterwards. Don't hate the player. Hate the game that involves all those spiders and hidden knives.
Yeah.
And that is from a lovely another podcast called Welcome to Night Vale. It's kind of hard to explain, but basically it's a fictional community radio podcast for a small desert town.
Like New Vegas?
Kind of. Like, imagine like Three Dog, but for a very small town, and there's paranormal stuff happening all over the place, and the government is really bad at keeping it hidden.
Okay.
And it's you can tell, like, there's a ton of, what's the gentleman's name who wrote Cthulhu?
H.P. Lovecraft.
Yes, there's tons of Lovecraftian reference to it. I can't believe that slipped my mind. Tons and tons. Like, they're the same people, like, I think the author wrote a book called, Unused Story Ideas of H.P. Lovecraft. And there's a ton of Lovecraftian kind of, like, you can just, it seeps with that kind of feeling. And it's this awesome combination of, like, creepy, like, just kind of subtle creepy, complete random, and dry humor funny.
Yeah, that's awesome,
really
actually.
Good. So, another recommendation for you guys, along with extra credits and King Grumps and whatever else has been talking about tonight. Welcome to Night Vale. It's a podcast. They release once on the 1st and once on the 15th every month. And yeah, it's super awesome. If you have, like, long drives to work or like long walks or whatever, podcasts are great. Moving along, you sent me this freakish article from Kotaku labeled "The Creepy Side of E3." Do you want to go into that?
Oh my god, yes I do. Okay, so.
I'm just looking at the quotes here. Hold on, just to give the listeners a preview, the quotes for this article, and it's talking about kind of the female experience in E3. I had to shake him off. So what booth do you belong to? And that was really rude and disgusting. So go ahead.
Okay, so I found this. I'm not a huge Kotaku reader. Like, I'll stumble upon some of their articles and whatever. Like, I really don't stick to Kotaku. Mostly because I fucking hate their community. Because we'll get into that another day about online communities. And that's actually a great topic that we should go into. But, yeah. And anyways, I woke up the other day and picked up my phone and checked out my Twitter feed, and somebody had retweeted this article by an author. Her name is Tina Amini from Kotaku, and she wrote this article called "The Creepy Side of E3." And if we write down a link dump for all the stuff that we talk about, which note to self, Striker, we totally should have a link dump. Yes, and basically she's talking about her experience going to E3 and for other women who've gone to E3, and it's basically you know, security guards getting touchy-feely, people directly assuming that a woman is a booth babe, and essentially, and you know, cosplayers and stuff. It's just it's disgusting, and to think that we're still dealing with this, I mean, fuck it. We're not the fucking middle ages. We're 2013. A woman should be able to go to a gaming convention, a gaming conference, what have you, and not worry about her personal safety, and not worry about, oh my god, am I going to get raped when I go here?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the softer things, like us kind of looking at you weird, that might happen for a little while, and you'll have to excuse most males if we do look at you weird once you actually start talking about video games to us.
Yeah.
But so far as getting touched like that, or like I try my very best whenever I meet a chick who's like who claims to be into games. I will always go, okay, you know, well, what do you play? You know, what are your games? Like, let's talk about games. I would never, even especially at you know, a convention like that, I would never assume that someone is a booth babe, necessarily. Like, that's kind of offensive, I would find. Like, even if you are, like, even if the person who you were talking to was, I don't think that they necessarily need to be reminded that, hey, you're just a showpiece. Where are you supposed to be showpiecing at?
Yeah. It's bothersome. I mean, and this isn't something... Well, this is something that I get really riled up over. As a person who has a vagina that is involved in the gaming community, this is something that comes into my face every single day. But on a larger scale, I'm not usually someone to freak out about minor things. Like, I don't consider myself... This is going to sound so bad to any female listener out there, but I don't consider myself a feminist in the way that it's kind of used today. The way I kind of see feminists now is that, you know, nitpicking at every single tiny little could-be-rape joke that they find, like... I mean, and I'm very well informed on feminism. I've read up on the first wave. I've read up on Betty Friedan, and, you know, it's something that I personally believe from as far as the first couple waves go. But, I mean, great, now I'm tangenting. but, yeah, as far as this wave of feminism go, it's like there's no cohesive goal, whereas the first couple waves of feminism did. And I don't consider myself a feminist of today, because it's like I don't want that stigma of being a nitpicky feminist asshole killjoy who wants to, you know, get in everyone's faces about a tiny joke or get in everyone's faces about, oh, though this is why men are so blah blah blah. And no, look, I can vote, I can become prime minister, I can do whatever the fuck I want. That's not for me. It really is.
Yeah.
But this is something that really gets to me. As somebody who has felt hostility from the gaming community, mostly men, of course, in the past, and even from females in the gaming community. And I find there have been females that I've met online, both on Rooster Teeth and through playing with them in Xbox Live, who just hate having another girl around. And this is the same for a lot of girls in men-centric communities, is that you're kind of used to being the girl in the gang, kind of the way that, you know, Penny from the Big Bang Theory is kind of,
Okay, so, small tangent. Big Bang Theory, when I first watched it, I watched a few episodes, caught a few episodes here and there. I was like, hey, this isn't bad. It's pretty funny, and it's not bad. And then I went over to, like, a friend's house, or, like, there's a friend that I hung out with who had, like, DVDs, and we threw them in, and we played Magic or whatever the fuck, and the more I watched it, the more that I realized that all of their misery is just caused by them not being smart enough to move away from Sheldon. Like, if I was in any of their position, I would just say, hey, I don't like you, I'm leaving now.
Yeah, like
there's a,
go ahead.
There's a point where you can deal with people who are annoying, like, definitely, and there's a point where you need to be polite, and there's a point where you should, you know, kind of look the other way, because it might be nice to not be in that person's bad side, in the future. But to the extent of them, like, it's seriously, like, it's painful for me to watch, like, every single episode. It's just, you know, he does something stupid because he doesn't understand people, and then it gets him into a shitty situation. Or, like, he's getting them into a shitty situation for no real reason, just because he wants to.
Yeah. I don't even like the Big Bang Theory, quite honestly. Mm. I'm not a fan of sitcoms. Unless it's, like, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air or, like, The Cosby Show. but that's because you have to love them. Yeah, I'm not a fan of sitcoms. I think they're really, really bland. I mean, my mother, I grew up with my mother. Obviously, I grew up with my mother. I'm not adopted. yeah, my mother watched a lot of soap operas. Her favorite, and my personal favorite with her, because it gives me nostalgia, is Coronation Street. And that's a really great show.
Oh, my God.
It's an awesome show. I mean, it's old as fuck, but it's great to watch. And I find that it's a lot more dynamic than other soap operas and sitcoms, because if you ever watch, like, Days of Our Lives or, like, General Hospital or whatever, those sets are so obviously sets. Which is what I hate. Like, do you ever watch...
Oh.
Like, yeah.
You're like, oh, look at how set up that is.
Yeah, it's a set. It is not a...
Nobody's place looks like that.
Yeah, exactly. And I find that's a big turn off for me when watching TV, is that, like, I can't get over that. Like, as someone who loves design and, you know, aesthetics, and who focuses on the detail of how something is set up, because as an artist I am, it just gets me so much. It just does. Like, familiarity is just... Ugh. Like, I like to switch it up so often, but it's just so boring watching them. So just looking at the sets, it's just, ugh. Disney shows do the same thing.
Yeah. Last thing, Indy had a TV that she needs to tell a story about, I guess.
Yeah. Basically, what we do for our topics is... What we decided to do for our topics, I should say, is that we send each other topic ideas, and we'll go earlier last week, I sent Stryker a bunch of ideas. Okay, let's do this one, and Indie's fucking TV. So it was literally us saying MMOs, gaming compulsion, Indie's fucking TV. So, so essentially... Shortly before I moved out of my dad's house, he bought a really, really big TV. And I'm talking like 60,000 inch plasma screen 3D TV. Like, it's a fucking huge TV. And I sat down when everyone had gone to bed, and I put in Skyrim. And I didn't realize this about TVs until that one night, but it was overwhelming. And not because of the size of the TV, because of the lag. Like, the TV was so bad for lag, for as far as games go. It was just like, you know how you fast travel in Skyrim? Like, you bring up your map, and then you put a cursor over where you want to go, and then you put it, and then fast travel.
Mm-hmm.
I had to, like, carefully inch my cursor close to where I wanted to go. Like, okay, let's go to the Thieves Guild at, like, inch it, millimeter by millimeter, because the lag was so bad, and, like, every time you turned your camera, it would be, like, the camera would turn too quickly, because the lag made the TV react in that kind of way. So it was just phenomenal. And then the next day, I wake up, and I put in Skyrim again, and lo and behold, and there's pictures of this on my Twitter account, because I was, like, live tweeting this as it was happening. Mm-hmm. But essentially, the TV started getting stripes across it, like fuzz. For anyone that's ever had an LCD or a plasma screen TV, you'll know what I mean. Because when there's, like, a loose cable inside the TV, what happens is that there'll be, like, a fuzzy kind of stripes that move across the TV, and makes it impossible to see what's going on. And it was like, yay, good thing I've done the Thieves Guild quest line before, because I can't fucking see a thing. So, and Igoraptor had mentioned in one video in Game Grumps, and I think it was the same Pokemon Let's Play that he did. And he was talking about finding a lagless gaming TV, and JonTron was like, man, it'd be cool to have one, but no one would buy it. And he's like, you know, no one would buy it. And then now I'm kind of thinking, like, fuck, yeah, I would buy a legless TV that's specifically made for gaming. It'd be glorious.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Give me five.
So we got this gigantic TV, and it turns out to be a piece of shit for gaming. And it's just too big. It's just too much. 50, 60 inches, that's too much for gaming. Like, the screen is just too wide, and just too much to look at.
Yeah.
So, if you're going to wrap it up for the night, I'm out of Guinness, so, yeah.
That's a good reason. All right. Well, that's been Link to the Podcast.
Thanks so much for
tuning in, guys. We will have another episode out probably in approximately a week or take a day. Our one this week came out a little bit late just due to the Indies travel schedule and us getting everything prepared. But we should be releasing on a fairly weekly basis. And once everybody gets settled, we'll have like a more specific like Mondays or Tuesdays or... we may even switch to like a bi-weekly or like twice a week or a twice a week schedule or whatnot, just depending on how well things go. So the only other thing I guess I wanted to mention, iTunes was mentioned too by someone. So we've got that all submitted. It's being reviewed now. So fingers crossed. And if not, you guys will know where to find us, and I'm sure Indy will keep posting links.
Yes, and I'll be posting links by Achievement Hunter and my Twitter account. I just wanted to mention one last thing for anybody in the Rooster Teeth and Achievement Hunter community. As many of you would know, David Drager, a.k.a. Knuckles Dawson, was a personality on the website for many, many a year, and recently, as of late May, he went missing from his Vancouver home. He left his phone and his wallet at his house, and he went missing. It was found recently, as of basically 4 days ago, that his body was found in a park north of Vancouver. And just much love and many prayers to his family going through this tough time. So for anyone that doesn't know, his Knuckles Dawson's body was found, and Sailor Tweak and everybody, thanks you so much for the support and for all the rallying that we've gone through trying to find this guy, but we're hoping that he's in a better place now. So without further ado, thank you for listening, everybody, and we will be back soon enough.
Good night.